Welcome to the Edu All Stars Podcast.
Hey guys, welcome to the 24th episode of Edu All Stars. I am one of your hosts, Todd Nesloni. You can find me on Twitter at TechNinjaTodd. Here with me today, I have...
My name is Chris Kessler. You can find me on Twitter at IamKessler.
And we are excited today to have the one and only Vicki Davis, who is a full-time teacher and IT director in Camilla, Georgia. She's also an active blogger, has her own show on the BAM radio network, and is author of the upcoming book, Reinventing Writing, and co-author of the Flattening Classrooms, Engaging Minds book. So Vicki, thanks for being with us here today. We really appreciate it.
I'm glad to be here. I love your show. It's, you and I were on my show earlier today, and I was saying, you know, you're kind of like the Larry King for education because you get such great stories out of people.
Well, we really appreciate that. We love talking to our guests and getting to hear and learn a little bit about them more than just the 140 characters we read from them. Well, we will go ahead and get started. Our first question that we usually ask our guests is to just kind of give us a little bit of background about how you got started in the education field.
Well, not the traditional way. I actually grew up in this tiny little town. I'm a farm girl. I was the Georgia Peanut Princess. So, you know, that's where I got used to being on stage a long time ago. I figure if you can do it in a bathing suit, you can certainly stand up there and speak in a suit. So I went to Georgia Tech and was a management major. Graduated first in my class. So I was really on the business track and went to work for GTE in their marketing associate development program. They moved me every 6 months. I was in the cell phone business before people, you know, back when we had bag phones and mobile-mounted phones and all that in 91, 92, 93, and moved back to South Georgia and was general manager for Cellular One back then for a couple years and started having kids and decided to be a stay-at-home mom for a while because I'm such a workaholic that I just didn't think there was going to be room for me to be a great mom and a great businesswoman. So I became a stay-at-home mom, and I kind of ended up starting my own business by accident. I've always loved technology, and I've been using it since the 70s. I was about 8, and my dad got a TRS-80, and he let me program it and play with it, even though it was very expensive at the time. I can't believe he did that, but he did. So people started asking me to do training classes. So adults asked me to do classes, and I would have full classes, you know, just teaching Excel and Word and that sort of thing in the 90s. And then the Program for Exceptional Children at our local public school asked me to do some training, follow-up to something called NTEC here in the state of Georgia. And I started training school systems, did a lot of research. My mom and sister are teachers, and spent a lot of time with them co-developing a curriculum for how could you reach every child in the classroom when you only had one or two computers. And a local college hired me to start teaching and doing things for them. And then my curriculum director at my school where I am now came to me and said, Vicki, you would make a great teacher. And I said, well, I never really planned to do that. She convinced me to try it out for a year, and that was 12 years ago. I fell in love with it. I fell in love with my students. You know, as much as I love teaching adults, there's nothing like teaching teenagers. I push them hard, but you just get so much. I mean, I saw two of them at Moe's the other day, and I probably taught them 5, 6 years ago, and they still call me Miss Vicki, and we had lots to say, and we have lots of memories. So, you know, teaching is just, it's what I love, and I'm glad to be in the classroom. And I threw myself, you know, once I got into K-12 teaching, I threw myself into a lot of classes so that I could learn all about this new career of mine that I didn't plan to take. Reading is very important to me, and trying to be the best at whatever you do in life is very important. So I read a lot. I probably read about an hour a night, and at least, and always have, and that's kind of, and then I just share on my blog whatever I've learned, and you know, and I just know a lot of really smart people. I've always been blessed to be able to meet amazing people in my life, and I'm very thankful for that.
So you've probably been connected all your life through, you know, you said you worked for Cellular One. You probably always had a cell phone and got on the internet when it first came out with AOL and all that good Netscape and everything. When did you get connected on Twitter, and kind of tell us a little bit about your, you know, your journey into being a connected educator?
Well, I started blogging in 2005. David Warlick was the speaker at the GAETC conference, which is the Georgia Technology Conference. And I realized that something fundamental had happened, and I had kind of, I didn't want to miss it because here's, let me back up a second. When I was at Georgia Tech in 1989, 1990, they did some of the first research on this crazy thing called the internet. And I programmed in HyperCard with some friends. And we programmed a program. It was called Indulgences Unlimited. Okay, it's not as bad as it sounds. It was, you could get taxis and tickets and nothing illegal, but taxis, tickets, movies, airfare, and hotels. Well, our professor stopped us and told us, I mean, we had the full working interface, it just didn't have the back end. Our professor told us, y'all really need to take this and turn it into a company. And we said, no, this internet thing, that is crazy. Who's going to do that? I mean, you know, why would you want to buy movies on the computer? You're going to, you know, you kind of go and you get your ticket, and then you go and you eat, and, you know. Okay, so we missed the boat. We were idiots because we had invented Expedia in 1990. So in 2005, when I was at the GAETC conference and I saw this Web 2.0 stuff, I realized that something had fundamentally changed and that it was happening again. And I was not going to be dumb. I mean, I knew it, my gut, I knew it. Here it is again. Vicki, what are you going to do with it? And more importantly, did I want my students to be behind? I wanted my students to be leading edge, and I knew that they couldn't be unless we were using blogs and wikis and all that. Now, I was actually in tears because I thought everybody, every other educator except for me, was using blogs, wikis, podcasts, and social bookmarking and all this stuff. So I jumped in, and then within the next month, I did 8 Web 2 tools, and this was back in 2005, and started blogging. I figured, you know, I can't write about knowing stuff, but I can write about not knowing stuff, and I can help people who are newbies like me. And so that's all the approach I've always tried to take on my blog is, can a beginner understand it? And I can get geeky, but I do try to think about the beginner. And then Twitter, Steve Dimbo told me Twitter was going to be big, and he's with Discovery Ed. He's an amazing person. He's another one of those amazing people. Yeah, Steve is great. He's so nice and helpful, just like David Warlick. And he said, it's going to be big, Vicki. You got to get on Twitter. And, you know, the thing I remember about getting on Twitter, I know this is odd, but I got on Twitter in March, and then I went to ISTE, and it was huge, just started being huge. And we're all like, what has happened? It was crazy because somebody tweeted out, hey, such and such is going on in such and such a room, and 50 people showed up. And we're like, what is this? You know, but what I remember the most was that was the summer that my grandmother passed away, my Granny Martin. I was very close to her. And I was at the funeral, and I was getting direct messages on my phone. And that was before I had a smartphone. Not many of us had one back then. And I was getting SMS messages, and they're like, what's going on? And these people were reaching out to me that I knew, sending me condolences about my grandmother passing away. And I was like, you know, something has really fundamentally changed with this Twitter thing. So I just started reading a lot about it. I read Twitter Power with Joel Comm and a lot of other things, and it's just such a useful way, especially for teachers, to communicate.
What advice do you give to other educators who may be afraid of connecting via any social network?
Well, I'm real hesitant. I'm not a social media snob. Like, I'm not. There are many fantastic educators. One of the best educators I know is 83 years old, and she is the director of her learning lab. She hasn't retired. She actually rides an hour a day on her bike, like 150 miles a week. The woman is amazing.
Wow.
She reads two or three books a week, and I think of all the people that wouldn't have. And see, she's connected because she's always coming to my room, Miss Atkins is, and she was my second grade teacher. She's always coming to my room and she's saying, Vicki, this, or Vicki, that, or, you know, and she's connected. So just because she's not connected on Twitter doesn't make her any less of an amazing educator. So I think the first thing is just to give the most the utmost respect for any educator who innovates. But that's the thing, is Ms. Atkins is 82, but she innovates, and she reads, and she never settles. She has not settled yet, and she's 82, and she has a great track record. I mean, there are surgeons with significant dyslexia who would have never gone to medical school who are saving lives now because Ms. Atkins took the time to diagnose their learning disability back in the 70s before people were talking about it. So, you know, I look at her and feel respect for her. I will say that it is very useful. It is very helpful. And it's kind of like this. You know, I wouldn't ride a bike to the grocery store when I have a car. You know, you can connect, but there are more efficient ways to connect. I don't know who's looking behind me. But there are, I hope he's dressed. But anyway, there are more efficient ways to connect than just walk into somebody's room, because the thing is that, you know, Ms. Atkins tells me about a book and now I can tweet it and tell 65,000 people about it.
Right.
So I think that information just travels much more quickly, and, you know, they don't need to be scared. You know, the one thing that people do when they get on Twitter is they make it private and they don't follow anybody. Well, they're never going to get Twitter and they're never going to like it. I think you have to follow 50 people before you really get Twitter and start going, hey, this is cool, yeah. You know?
Right.
So, like our podcast, every week you interview people on your show on the BAM Radio Network called, and I think your show is Every Classroom Matters. Can you tell us a little bit about how that came about and what your show's about?
Well, I did a show a long time ago with some amazing educators, Cheryl Oakes and Jennifer Wagner and Sharon Peters, and we were the Women of Web 2. And it was a great show. It was on EdTech Talk, and but it was an hour long once a week. And it was just so much. And I know y'all are doing it now, so I don't want to discourage you, but I think we did like 100 shows or something crazy. And after a while, it was just really hard to keep up with it. My kids were getting older, and I had some in middle school and some in high school, and I just couldn't keep up with it. But as I moved away from that and started blogging, I just realized that, you know, I really like talking to amazing people. And I love books, and I love authors, and I love people who write books, and people who, you know, there's so many exceptional people in this world. And my passion is for the average everyday teacher. The average everyday teacher is actually not as average as they think they are. But it's, you know, I want to tell the story of regular teachers, kind of like you guys do, regular teachers who love their students, who may or may not use technology, but they're going to do anything it takes to reach students.
Right.
But also students. I mean, I have a cute boy, Joshua Williams from Miami, and the show just went live. I was just tweeting it out before we went on now, and the boy made me cry. He was a Prudential Spirit of Award winner, and he is feeding over 100,000 hungry people a year in Miami through his nonprofit. I said, Joshua, what do you want? He says, if, you know, if somebody gave you $100,000 today, Joshua, what would you do with that? And he says, Miss Vicki, I would buy a semi-truck because it costs a lot of money to rent a semi-truck every time we do food distribution. And here's a kid who says, you know what, we got problems in this world, but I'm not going to sit around and complain about them. I'm going to do something. Right. And I think a lot of us adults can learn from that kind of attitude. It's time to, you know, I don't care what school you go to or where you work. If you're an exceptional teacher, we need to learn from each other. I don't really get into these artificial barriers that a lot of these organizations try to put between us. Mm-hmm. Public, private, charter, e-learning, homeschool, if you've got something amazing, I want to learn from you and I want to share your story. So that's kind of the whole idea behind Every Classroom Matters, because every classroom, no matter where it is, whether you're sitting there at the kitchen table tutoring your child or whether you're, you know, you've got 500 kids in South Africa, and believe it or not, I have met a teacher who teaches 500 kids at a time in South Africa.
Wow.
And, you know, our classrooms are very important, and it's time to talk about those practices. And I think that we've let too many people who left the classroom, like the only way to be a better teacher is to be promoted out of the classroom. Well, it's time to start having amazing teachers stay in the classroom and share on podcasts and shows like you have, and share in their books, but stay in the classroom and stay real and share what we're doing. And so it's a celebration of real teachers and real students and the kind of education that we need in this world.
Well, now, we've talked a little bit about you blogging, and you even won a Best Teacher Blog Winner thing, but have you always been a writer at heart, or was it something that you had to kind of grow into?
I started journaling when I was 8, and probably by the time I was 12, I was writing an hour a day in my journal. You know, the Malcolm Gladwell has his 10,000 hour rule, and I played around with it one day, and you know, I probably hit 10,000 hours some time ago. Now, I was able to go to a program called Governor's Honors in the state of Georgia in communicative writing, and I spent a whole summer writing. I probably wrote 4 or 5 hours a day for 6 weeks. And that was when, even though I went to a technical school, even though I went into business, I have always loved the words on the page. And, you know, I just like to write, and I like to... for people to feel emotion. And, you know, I think the thing I love most about writing was what Dale Carnegie did for me, because I was picked on as a child. I had 5 years where I went home every day and cried. I didn't fit in. I was real heavy. I had glasses and braces, and I was the smart kid, and I just didn't fit in. And my mom handed me Dale Carnegie's book, How to Win Friends and Influence People, mm-hmm. in sixth grade. And she said, Vicki, read this book until it starts helping and starts making sense. And I just remember reading that book, and about in eighth grade, it started making a difference. And I remember sitting in my room thinking, you know what, this man reached across time and space to somebody he doesn't even know, this little old girl in middle school in rural Georgia, and he changed my life. And I wrote in my journal some of the goals for my life when I was 12, and one of them was to be the kind of writer that would change people's lives and help them to live a better life like Dale Carnegie did for me.
That's awesome.
Wow.
So you co-wrote a book called Flattening Classrooms, Engaging Minds. How'd that come about, and what is it about?
Well, I was co-founder of the Flat Classroom Projects, which really took off and... very quickly, started with 23 students in 2 classrooms and ended up being, thousands of kids and just so many classrooms. And it was kindergarten through 12th grade, and we had pre-service teachers involved in a conference. We have many different things, and it's really a great set of projects that I've done with Julie Lindsay for many years. So I'm in the process of kind of stepping back and stepping out of that right now, just because it was just overwhelming. I mean, I want to stay in the classroom, and I kind of had to make a decision. Do I want to stay in the classroom, or do I want to go and do this? And I just, my youngest is in sixth grade. Now, my oldest is now a freshman at Georgia Tech, where my husband and I went to school. And my daughter, who's a senior, who has actually spoken at ISTE with Sylvia Martinez about how to get more girls in STEM. Yeah, she... Sylvia hired her, for Jen Yes for the booth, kind of as a favor for me, but they hit it off, and she had her on a little panel, and she's won some awards for some programming and things she's done. So she's going into computer science, and she really, we're crossing our fingers, hoping she can go to Georgia Tech. Of course, we try not to brainwash her, but we probably have, because we kind of bleed gold and black around here, but... anyway, we're waiting to hear on that. She wants to do computer science, and my youngest is in sixth grade, but 2 of my 3 actually have learning differences. I don't call them disabilities, because they learn differently, mm-hmm. and that's in a lot of ways has pushed me to have to, a lot of the resources I share, I had to find. Spelling City, how can you teach a dyslexic to spell? It's very, very hard, and but my youngest, who's dyslexic, is now one of the top readers in the school. He's already at 500% of his AR goal for this 8 weeks. He reads about 700 pages a week. So I'm very proud of that. But I understand. I know what it's like to be a parent who gets back those test scores and just sit down in the den and cry, because you sit there and you wonder, what did I eat wrong when I was pregnant, or what did I do, or what's genetically wrong with me that my child would have a learning difference? But, you know, you can, I'm not going to say overcome, because you never overcome it, but you can learn to succeed anyway. And in some ways, you can be stronger if you know how to accommodate.
Well, you're also working on a book right now called Reinventing Writing. What's that one about?
Well, I love reinventing writing. I actually was editing just before the show, trying to cut it down because it was too long. I know you know how that is. But it's about the 9 tools that are changing writing, learning, and living forever and how to teach with them. It really started kind of bothering me that we've got all these new electronic tools. We've got blogging, we've got wikis, but we've also got electronic notebooks. We've got social bookmarking, which I call e-note cards. That's really what they are. We've got electronic filing cabinets. That's really cloud syncing. We've got all these different things, and we've got the offline version. We've got the online version. So I wrote the whole book, and it was really geeky. And then I said, you know what? This is not the book I wanted to write. I wanted to write a book for the average everyday teacher, the Miss Adkinses and the other teachers that I respect so much, that they could pick up and they could say, okay, I've been doing journals. Now what do I want to do? I've been doing graphic organizers. Now what am I going to do? So that they can have the electronic equivalent of what they've been doing all this time, but then also learn what are the things that have changed that I can do that I couldn't do before. Like wikis, for example, are a fundamentally new, different academic tool being used very, very heavily at the college level. And I believe that you cannot be a well-educated 21st century student, that buzzword, if you have not been exposed to a wiki. You have to know how to do that. Blogging is fundamentally different. Now, there are a lot of things that are very similar. Evernote is very much like note-taking that we're used to, Evernote and OneNote. Dropbox is very much like the hard drives we're used to, except you can just do so many more things and take your classroom paperless with them. So, you know, so it's about those 9 tools, and then also how to build a community, a writing community, because community building is not something that a lot of teachers understand how to do. So I want them, you know, based on my own experiences, how do you build a community of writers and get it started? Because honestly, a community is built in the first week.
Right.
When you really get them going, and you know how that is because you've been doing stuff in your own classroom. You got to get them going and get them commenting and get them engaged, and then it just kind of takes off, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you do some public speaking as well for companies like Google and Discovery and some conferences. Let's talk about, I got messed up here. Did I skip a question, Ton?
No, I changed it.
Oh, okay. I was like, wait a second, I just read this 2 minutes ago. This is not the question I was reading. So let me ask this question. Is it difficult to balance your speaking and your classroom work?
I have 9 personal days a year, and so I do about 4 or 5 keynotes during the school year. And then I'll do 4 or 5 in the summer. So I did overdo it the first couple years. And you get in such shock. You're like, people want to talk to me? You know? I mean, I've heard Todd say that before. Me? You're talking to me? You know? Yeah. And then the other thing I had to learn was how to say no sometimes. I do want to do as much as I can. But, you know, now that I've been doing this for a while, I've been blogging since 05, there have been 3 or 4 times I've pushed myself to the edge of burnout. And, you know, here's the thing is that I'm a teacher, and I need to be getting those the grading back. I mean, we hate to grade, but we have to do it. I need to be keeping up with that. I need to be keeping up with my students. I need to be, deliver lessons. I need to, almost like it's performance, you know. I really agree with Dave Burgess, and I hope you get him on the show because he's just so great.
Yeah, we've had him. He was amazing.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
He's awesome.
I love Dave. I'm all teach like a pirate.
Yep.
I mean, oh, man. Yeah, we did the Play-Doh thing, and I collapsed on the floor the first week of school. Oh, yeah, we did it. The island activity. But awesome. I totally lost. But, you know, I do speak. One of my most popular speeches is actually called 21st Century Influencer, and it's how to influence change no matter where you are in the organization, because you can influence change even when you're a teacher. And there's research behind it. A lot of it's based on Kerry Patterson's book called The Influencer, The Power to Change Anything, which is a great book. I highly recommend it. But there are ways that we can promote change in our school But it happens over long term. It doesn't happen with a new kid that comes in and tells everybody they're doing everything wrong. That's not the way you promote change. You promote change with respect and time and encouraging and working with the willing.
So do you ever get nervous having to do these since you've done them so often?
Well, you know, I told you I was on a bathing suit on the stage. And you know, it was funny. I was speaking in Arkansas at their TCAL conference, and my heel got caught in the stage. And I had a flashback to when I was in a bathing suit on the stage for the Georgia Peanut Princess pageant, and my heel got caught in the stage. And I just kept giving out the speech. And, you know, I figured at the end of the speech, I would just, if I couldn't get my shoe out of the stage, I was just going to pick it up, and I was just going to grab it out of the stage and just say, you know, and this is like what happens in teaching. Sometimes things don't work right, but, you know, it's not going to kill us. You know, I spent this whole speech with my foot caught in the stage. But, you know, honestly, it's harder to teach teenagers than it is to do keynotes. I love teaching teachers. I love them. And when I see the teachers in the crowd, and then I like to come in early and meet people and get to know them, I just have this overwhelming sense of love and, in some ways, heartbreak for what so many are going through. This is a profession they love, that they've given their lives to. And many, many teachers are being treated the wrong way. They're right. Given everything they have, and it's not enough. And I sure hope, because Todd, I know that both of you, Todd and Chris, both of you have a lot of influence in your circles to really speak for those teachers that are being unfairly treated right now. And they're not just in the public school system. They're many in many areas. But to say, to look at a child is not a number. Mm-hmm. You cannot condense a child down to a number. And to do that is a grave disservice. So, and teachers aren't numbers either. And you know, here's the thing, is some years, you know, I teach the same courses every year. I change them a lot, but I teach, you know, computer science every year. And some years my average may be a 95. And some years my average is an 88. And I am the same teacher. I'm working hard to teach them. And I'll tell you, if my average is an 88, I'm probably earning that 88 more than I even earn that 95. Because sometimes you hit the jackpot, and you get a lot of kids who are self-taught and really get it. And then sometimes you get a lot of kids with learning differences. And yep. You have to work really, really hard. Or you have a huge class and you can't do anything about it. I mean, one time I had so many kids and a kid transferred in and they didn't want to say no. And they put the child at my desk. And here I'm sitting there with like 24 kids plus somebody sitting at my desk the whole period. It almost killed me. But, you know, I just care about teachers, and I would just like to do a good job for them.
Well, you know, one thing we always like to ask our guests as well is, if you could go back 5 or 10 years and look at where you are now and give yourself some advice, what would you tell yourself?
I would tell myself that your family is always the most important. That, this is a hard one for me. There's a great book by Henry Cloud called Necessary Endings. This is my, you can see it right there. This is my favorite mm-hmm. book right now. Not everybody who comes with well wishes you well. To be very, you know, I dig deeper. It's like, Todd, I had you on my show today, and Chris, I've got you on my list because I heard your bio. I went back to show number one and heard your bio, and so you're on my list here.
Okay.
But I dig a lot deeper about people. You can say you know somebody on the internet, but you do not.
Mm-hmm.
You do not. You do not know people through the internet. Now, you may know of them. You may have first appearance, but how many first impressions are wrong?
Right.
You know, I live in a community, a small community, and there are certain people that make great first impressions, and newcomers come in town, and we say, oh, yeah, you know, Joey over here, he'll impress them for about 2 weeks, and then they'll get his number. Well, if you think about it, if you only see somebody very infrequently, how well do you really know that person? So it's not that I want people to be distrusting, but I do think that you have to have discernment and wisdom and to proceed with caution, because not everybody who lights up your inbox is going to light up your life.
Yeah. Good advice. Has there ever been a time in your career when you've fallen flat on your face or you've kind of made a mistake that you've really learned from it?
Oh, goodness. So many times. I think we all fall down. I think we all screw up. You know, my biggest screw-ups have to do with my workaholism. I don't drink, but I'm a workaholic, and I have to be real careful. You know, I mean, I used to do all-nighters all the time till I was in my mid-30s and started getting migraines. And that's just not a good way to live. So, you know, I think my biggest mistakes have been the mistake of thinking that I'm an infinite resource. We are not infinite, and we have to choose. And there is a big difference between good and great. And there are things that we are born to do and things that we can just do a good job at. And I think that we have to, in pursuit of excellence, and this is part of what Henry Cloud says in his book, Necessary Endings, is that we really have to look at, you know, what are the things I was born to do? What are the things I'm incredible at doing? And then focus on that. You know, I could be an accountant. I was a very good businesswoman. I was paid on commission, and I made great money. But was I born to do that? Do I have the love that I have when I sit in front of my classroom? I mean, I literally feel the same rush in front of my students every morning that I feel at a keynote with 5,000 people. I mean, I feel that same, like, yeah, I'm here, you know? I'm so mm-hmm. excited to be here. And, you know,
we get
so,
it. I mean, we're the same yeah. way.
You know,
Todd, what she's saying, I think, is that you need to stop working so much and start drinking more.
I just drink coffee. That's my.
Yeah. Oh no, I don't need coffee. That my friend.
No, he does not need coffee.
Red Bull.
Well, you know, what advice would you have for a teacher just getting started in their career?
Goodness. I would say that teachers need to always be willing to learn new things, but always be willing to teach new things. New teachers do have a lot to teach mm-hmm. the people who've been there for a while. So don't think that you have to start at the bottom. You have a lot to add and you have a lot to bring. But respect and listen to people who've been around the block. Sometimes they're not jaded. I remember my first couple years hearing people say certain things and going, they're just jaded. Okay, they're not jaded. They've seen it. They've done it. I mean, I had two boys today in a class, and I kept watching them. I knew something was up, and they were finishing this online quiz thing I had set up at exactly the same time doing there, and I just went over there, and they finished exactly. They made the same grade. I'm like, guys, you're going to be taking this again after school separately because something went on here. And that we didn't. I said, I'm sorry. I've been doing this for a very long time. And, you know, if I smell chicken litter, somebody spread it somewhere. And I smell something here and something went on. So, you know, it's not that older teachers are jaded. They do have a lot of experience. And then I think the other thing that I would tell them is when you're a new teacher, I think the biggest risk you have is getting overly emotional. And one of the best things I learned very early on because, you know, now I lose my temper so rarely. It's like every year and a half and everybody in the school knows it because usually if I lose my temper, I have a very good reason and it tends to be very well known that I've lost my temper because it just doesn't happen. I'm pretty easygoing. But early on, because I came from the business world, you know, I could fire people. Well, you can't fire your students. And they can show up late, and they cannot do what they're supposed to do. And losing your temper at them doesn't do a doggone thing except just make you get upset.
Right.
So I learned early that if I feel like I'm losing it, if I feel like I'm completely losing it, to depend on Betsy Caldwell, who's my next-door neighbor. She actually taught me literature. She's amazing. I'll step in there, and I'll say, Betsy, I need to step out of my classroom a minute. And I don't do it very often, but she knows when I do it, I have a reason. Because if I can't be the adult in a situation, I need to be out of that situation until I can be the adult. And, you know, losing your temper, out of control losing your temper. We all lose our temper at a class, and sometimes they need to hear it. But I'm talking out of control, losing your temper, where you do not know the next word coming out of your mouth. you will always regret it, and you have got to get a handle on that real quickly. And I love Fred Jones' Tools for Teachers was the book that really helped me with that. And I think people who come from the business world probably are going to have more of a problem with that than maybe people who come straight out of ed school, just because business is you do what you're supposed to do when you do it. And, you know, as y'all know, schools, that just doesn't happen, not even with administration and front office. True. They don't really treat it like a business either.
Yeah, it's something that I came from the business world myself, and I struggle with that. Just seeing administration working with faculty and faculty working with students, it's just some of the inefficiencies that I would say would happen in a business environment that happen in a school environment. It's very frustrating to me. But I've been able to handle that over the years. But
you're right. It is frustrating, Chris. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So being in education, we've all made those connections with parents or students or other staff members that kind of impact us emotionally and stick with us forever. Can you think of an experience in your career or in your education that you'll remember forever?
Yes, it happened first semester last year, right before Christmas. I have a young man who I love very dearly, and he's had a hard life. His father was killed when he was in eighth grade in a very senseless reason. And sometimes he, after that, would just have a hard time, and he wouldn't turn in his work. But he loves programming. He loves computer science. And his grades had dropped, and this was first semester, and he had a video he needed to do, and he had a couple other things he needed to do. And I knew he had done them, but I knew he wasn't turning them in, because sometimes kids who feel bad about themselves sabotage themselves. I feel bad about me, so I'm not going to turn this in, so you can give me the grade I think I deserve, because I think I'm an F. You know, that's what they do, and it's a tough thing. Well, I called him in, and I'm just going to call him Tom. That's not his name, but I'm calling Tom. And I said, Tom, here's the deal. I'm going to want to write you a recommendation one day, and you're excellent in my class, but I cannot do that if you don't take care of this. I see you. You're an A person, but I believe you're an A computer science student. And I'm not going to stop until you get this. And he says, oh, no, Miss Vicky. He says, this is the best I can do. I said, it absolutely is not the best you can do, and I'm not accepting it. I'm not. You got 3 days left. We're going to work it out. I'm going to go to these other classes, and I helped arrange his schedule. I talked to his mom. I got his mom on board. His mom came down, and we talked to him. Well, long story short, he ended up turning in the work. I put in the grades, and then I'll never forget it. There was nobody in my room, and he came back to my desk. He came in. It was break, and he came in, and he stood at my desk, and he looked at me, and he had tears in his eyes. And he said, Miss Vicky, he said, thank you for believing in me when I did not believe in myself. Mm-hmm. And, you know, every time I think about that, I just think about, you know, I asked myself with him, why am I doing this? He doesn't want to do this. Why am I pursuing him? Why am I expecting for him to do his best when he does not want to do it? And he's fighting me every day. Why? And I just saw in that, you know, any teacher can teach a student who is a self-taught student. You know, you're 199 and 98, 97 average students. I hate to tell most teachers, but those students would teach themselves. You don't even have to be in that room. They're going to have that textbook, and they're going to teach themselves. But it's students like Tom, that's our legacy. Those are the students who will never forget us. And those we cannot give up. And we have to believe in them when they don't believe in themselves, and we have to see past this hard exterior. And if we can just look for Toms, if we can look for them, and know that they're there, and be unselfish enough with our own busy lives to see them. And I think that goes back to the mistakes I've made. When I get so hung up in social media drama, which I just don't do anymore, or so hung up in this or that, and I miss out on reaching a student, then that would be a shame, because that's what I'm here for.
That's powerful. I love that
story.
Chris?
You're wordless.
I'm off tonight.
I'm not drinking enough, I guess. That's what the problem is here. So, a last question that we always like to end the interview with is, what are you really passionate about right now in education?
Oh, goodness. Well, I would say ticked off is probably a better word. I teach in a private school. Mm-hmm. But I have friends who write me letters, and I have tons of friends in public, private, everywhere. And they will send me these letters about this happened or that happened. And, for example, one of my friends talked to me, and they read my blog. It's kind of funny. People in Camilla are reading my blog now, which really scares me. I was working concession stand with somebody not too long ago, and they said, you know, Vicki, what you were talking about this or that, they said, I had a boy, and I think the age you can pull yourself out of school in Georgia, I can't remember if it's 16 or 17. I think it might actually be 17. But anyway, had a boy. He was about to turn the age that he could drop out of school, and it was time for standardized tests. And I had 3 days left with him, and he was in my special needs group. And I begged my administrator, could I teach this boy how to balance his checkbook? Because he's refusing to take the standardized test. He says the last thing he's going to do in school, in high school, is refuse to take the test. He's not going to graduate, but he's going to spend 3 days refusing to take the test. But I want to teach him how to balance his checkbook because he's about to be a father. He needs to know this. And do you know that she had to sit there and watch that boy sit in a desk looking at a pencil and looking at a blank standardized test, refusing to take that standardized test for 3 days? Now, I'm sorry, and I grew up on a farm, and I'm a farmer's daughter, and if something was broken, we fixed it. It didn't matter who broke it. We fixed it. That's what you do, and that's what America was founded upon. When something's broken, we don't sit around and blame people, which is what we're doing right now. Oh, it's their fault. It's their fault. Okay, it's everybody. Every single person has allowed us to get to this state. When you have states testing 60 and 70 days out of the school year, when can they teach? That is ridiculous. I have a nephew in Atlanta that he made an 88 in history in eighth grade. He takes the standardized test and he passed by 1 point. He almost had to repeat that. He wasn't taught it, and I believe him because he made a great grade in the class. So having these crazy tests that are not aligned with our curriculum, who does that? And every parent and every teacher and every administrator should be saying, you know what, this is enough. This is ridiculous. Why are we doing this? It makes me furious for the kids. It makes me furious for the teachers. We've got some of these evaluation systems. I think I read the other day, it's like New York State Teacher of the Year did not get top reviews. And you're like, something is crazy here. And it's time for teachers to take back education. It's time for us to be the media, because we are. And that's one reason for Every Classroom Matters. And I know for your show and for what we're doing in our blogs. I mean, it's time to take back education and say, you know what, this is all of our problem, and we're gonna study, and we're gonna share best practices, and we're gonna speak out, and we're gonna say enough, enough. And so it just, you know, we're all here for a reason. I believe that. And the greatest people are not those born in easy times. I mean, who do we talk about? We talk about Winston Churchill. We talk about Abraham Lincoln. We talk about George Washington. We talk about people that we wouldn't want to be. And if you go in the National Archives, when ISTE was up in D.C., and Angela Myers and some of us were, Cheryl Oaks, we were in the National Archives getting shushed by the person in charge because we were loud. We kept getting excited about these quotes on the ceiling, and we would go, and everybody's coming up going, there was a whole wall of quotes of people who said hateful things about George Washington. And we, you know, our biggest concern in the United States seems to be popularity. As long as we're concerned about being popular, we're not going to be able to make a difference in this world, because there's some very unpopular things that need to be said. And that's the one thing that I would encourage y'all And I know you're missing one of your threesome here. I know Stacy's not here tonight, but tell her I missed her because I was looking forward to getting to talk to her. But, you know, say the things that are unpopular that need to be said and to speak out and to make a difference in this world because, you know, it's time for real practicing classroom teachers like you, both of you, who have all the credentials and all the rewards and all the awards and all the recognition. People will listen to you, and you have to be brave and you have to be courageous because it was, you know, Winston Churchill told his people, never, never, never give up. I have it on my fridge. And we're not giving up this generation, and we're not giving up on education. Everyone should have a good education, everyone. And it's time to move forward and move forward together and stop blaming people and stop calling names and all this silly stuff that's happening. So I guess you asked me about my passion, and I do have a lot of passions and things I'm doing in my classroom, but I'm really, in many ways, just ticked off. And every day I read the news, and I'm like, you know, what is wrong here? You know, there's something crazy going on.
Turn around real quick.
Oh, John. Oh, gosh. He's holding up the never, never, never give up thing. Like, he's not entirely dressed.
I was trying to hold my face steady, and I could just see Chris losing it
before
he won.
Oh, I love my children. They're just...
One of the best two-minute speeches on a show, and the son comes in with no shirt. And, yeah. Oh, it's amazing. Absolutely amazing.
Can't take ourselves too seriously now, can we?
Hey, that's a real moment right there. That's real life.
Oh, goodness. Well,
what you said, I mean, you're obviously preaching to the choir here, and we vehemently agree with you on everything you've said. That's and we're doing that. We are saying what needs to be said.
You are, and you're telling the stories of real educators. That's what I like. Mm-hmm. You know, they're the prepackaged people that have been given the same speech for 20 years. Mm-hmm. And there are many great people in education. But then there's a new thing to be said right now because kids' brains have changed. If you look at their research, their brains are changing. And because of all these electronics that they're hooked up to all the time. Mm-hmm. And our methods need to change and the things we do need to change. And practicing classroom educators are best positioned to share what those are.
Right.
Fully agree.
Well, Vicki, we wanted to thank you so much for coming on here today. It's been great getting to hear from you and get to talk with you a little bit and learn a little bit more about you. Like I said earlier, more than just the 140 characters that we sometimes see or the blog posts. So thank you so much for coming on with us today.
I appreciate it. It's been an honor. I've listened to y'all's show. It's one of my – I have about three, yours, Aaron Maurer's, and of course I listen to my own show. And a few others from BAM Radio that I listen to. Mm-hmm. So I appreciate you guys doing this and Stacy, and just keep it going. And, you know, I'm a big fan. Thanks.
Cool. Appreciate
it. Well, those of you who are still listening, thank you so much for being here as well. You can connect with us on Twitter at EduAllStarsHQ, and you can use the hashtag EduAllStars. You can also go to our website, which is EduAllStars.com, to see all the previously recorded interviews with the other 23 guests. And you can also find us on iTunes by searching EduAllStars with no spaces. We're excited about our guests that we have for the next 2 weeks. Next Monday at 9 a.m., yes, 9 a.m., we are on Thanksgiving break, so we're getting one in before Chris and I start heading out places. But we have the Remind 101 co-founder, Brett Koff, coming in. He's got some cool things to share in his story and background with education. And then one that I know Chris is super pumped about is on December 4th, Wednesday at 5 p.m. We will be interviewing the incredible science guy, Steve Spangler. So definitely check those out for us.
Yeah, and if you've stuck around this long, we think that you probably like the show. We'd really encourage you to go out there and subscribe to it via iTunes or leave a rating and some feedback. It would be super helpful in our rankings and just super appreciated.
Thanks so much, guys. Have a great one.
All right. Take care.